find out what it's like to experience the world from above. Fly your own drone today. DroneCloneExperts.com specializes in high-quality, affordable drones. Now introducing their Limitless 2 model, equipped with a 4K camera for stunning Ultra HD clarity, GPS with precision auto return, and up to 25 minutes flight time on a single charge. Visit DroneCloneExperts.com now and enter promo code RADIO to receive 15% off your entire order. That's DroneCloneExperts.com.
Hi, this is Suze Lanier from The Hills Have Eyes, and I am on Verbal Shenanigans.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Oh, hey, hello everybody. Hello.
Can hear you.
Can't hear me. I can hear you. Oh, hey, I'm muted. Hey, I'm mute. I was gonna try to do the whole show, Mike. You not being able to hear me and guess what we're talking about. It's like a concept podcast.
Oh, kind of like a lip reading kind of improv podcast.
Yeah, let's try right now. I'm gonna mute myself. Anybody, welcome to the show. This is Verbal Shenanigans. If you are just tuning in, we are a weekly podcast that likes to bring on interesting people and talk to interesting guests and talk about life and banter and all that other fun stuff. So welcome to the show. So, Mike, what did I say?
Because you didn't unmute it.
Oh, I did. Oh, I didn't unmute myself. crap. I muted me. No, I mean it's you, not me. Damn it. Well, anyway, that was a failed experiment. But anyway, welcome.
Verbal Shenanigans, going to the edge and falling right off.
Well, that's great, too, because before this, I tried to do an intro with you where I just called you live, and you were like, what the hell? And then I stopped halfway because you pointed out that I made like 8 spelling mistakes and name mistakes on the description of our Sons of Silver episode. So it's the usual. It's failed experiment after failed experiment. That's basically what the podcast is. One giant failed experiment. But we are happy to be here and welcome back. Mike, how are you doing?
Little down week there, Scotty. With everything that happened over the weekend and with the Black Panther, just very depressing. And I watched the interviews. It was really nice of ABC to kind of rush the movie on a TV as admiration to him, and then they had like a really quick kind of like interview with people who worked with him. I mean, Bondsman was just an insanely great actor. I mean, I remember him from 42 before I remember him in Black Panther, and he just, everything he did, he just knocked out of the park. And I mean,
yeah,
I don't want to trivialize the man's life to his acting career, because he seemed to be such a down-to-earth person, like visiting kids in hospitals, and he just seemed like an all-around great person. So the just utter shock of you sent me the text. Yep. I'm like, what?
Yeah, Friday night I was on I do a Zoom call with my friends. We talked about it before. We've still been keeping it going, probably like, I don't know how long. Basically, the whole pregnancy of my child has been, we've been talking about the Zoom. since I found out that my wife was pregnant till now, it's basically, I kind of told my friends at the beginning, we're still doing these Zoom calls. So just the length of the pandemic is ridiculous. But
Were you making the baby on the Zoom call? Because that seems like a very odd meeting.
No, we were a little bit before that, but, you know, maybe for kid number two. Maybe if we have another kid.
There you go.
We could arrange that. We could do, like, a live viewing on Verbal Shenanigans or, like, you know.
I mean, I got to figure the 5G will be, like, really, like, homed in by then. So we can get, like, our entire audience on the Zoom call. And it's like, all right, guys, I'm going under the sheets.
Yeah, you could just subscribe on Patreon or something, pay $5 to watch me make my next child, something like that, you know?
Yeah.
No, I was doing the Zoom call.
You put in $20, you can give pointers as it's going, you know? Scott, Jim from Arizona says, why don't you try it on the right side?
Oh, God, I could use all the pointers in the world, so I'm open to that. No, I was doing the Zoom call, and I was just zoning out. I think people were talking about politics, which always seems to happen at least for like a half hour on the Zoom call. You can't avoid it.
Can't escape it.
Yep. That's usually where I start just looking on my phone, Googling things. I'll do podcast work, like look at our calendar and stuff like that during that.
Just chime in every once in a while. Yeah, that side is terrible.
Yeah, yeah, they're awful. They're awful. Because I'm so politically burned out, if you will. Like I like a good political joke. Like I like a good political joke on either side. Because I think these guys are basically like it's like two grandpas, like two crazy grandpas, just at the VFW hall debating each other on like stuff. That's what these guys sound like. But you know, with all the things going on with the police and the Blake story, like we were talking about last week and everything, that's kind of what the hot topic was. And I, you know, I just kind of checked out. So I started Googling on my phone. Googling. See, I'm starting to sound like Joe Biden. So
I put down the phone and I started the Google. And then guess what the Googling did?
Yeah. So I started doing the Google machine. And I see on Facebook or something like that, like Chadwick Boseman died. And I'm like, yeah, okay. Like, this is one of those, like, click on it for whatever, views kind of, you know, clickbait kind of thing. And I start checking multiple sources. And I'm like, oh, my God, like, this is terrible. And, like, your first thought was, like, how is this guy, like, did he die in a car accident? Did he die tragically? Because, you know, he looked like a very healthy young man, you know, like a healthy young virile guy, at least in the movies, you know, where we see him.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of like sat there and I waited for like a break in the political discussion that was happening in the Zoom thing. And I'm like, one of my friends was even like, Scott, what's up? Like, because I wasn't talking, I was kind of like, zoning. I'm like, dude, I said, I think Chadwick Boseman just died. And even when I said it, like there was this kind of like no reaction for like 30 seconds, like almost like you had to like people had to pick up on like the name, get the guy in their head, think about what I just said, and then think about him dying. Like kind of like what I was doing on the phone by myself, but everyone on the call was kind of like processing what I just said. You know?
Yeah, there's kind of like a checklist for when a young celebrity dies, right, where you literally got to pull out the piece of paper. Do I know the celebrity? Yes. Do I right. know something he was in? Yes. Mm-hmm. Was he supposed to die? No.
No.
And then it's like you go to the end. It's like, okay, my reaction is what?
Yeah, and it's like, is this the guy? Am I thinking of the wrong guy? Chadwick Boseman. That's an interesting name. Like, is it someone else? Is it this older guy? Like, I was thinking all that. And it was like this silence kind of for like 30. And then it was like, what? And everybody was like, no way. And like, my friend Mike ran and told his wife, like, they love Marvel movies together. And then like another guy was like, hey, you know, hey, Lisa, like Chadwick Boseman died. And then I actually went downstairs. My wife was sleeping. And my wife is 7.5 months pregnant, and I woke her, you know, waking her up is like waking up a bear, you know, like you don't want to. And I even woke her up and I was like, babe, like I said, Chadwick Boseman died. And she's like, I'm like, the guy who played Panther. She's like, what? Like, because we both really love that movie. Initial reaction was just like really sad. Like, I think we talked about, you know, we've talked about celebrity deaths a lot on here. And now a lot of times it's kind of like, you know, they were older and whatnot. A lot of times I'm not invested in the celebrity. And like, here's like a guy who you thought was just hitting that Black Panther was the one that was going to send him into 30 more roles that are made. Like, he was going to be one of the top guys. You know what I mean? He's going to be like the guy, you know? And I don't know. I had instant sadness, man. Like, I was definitely, like, very bummed out looking at it. I did watch that same thing you were talking about, the ABC thing. And, you know, the way people speak about him. And then I even reposted today, I think it was, or maybe yesterday. Ryan Coogler, the director of Black Panther, wrote this really interesting thing about him on, I mean, how much he really directed the film. Like, Chadwick was the one who really wanted to bring in, like, more and more, like, African-centric speech in African, and he knew, I guess he knew it was going to be a bigger thing than even the director knew. He was like, you know, and yeah, it's just another reminder of how fragile and how short and how vulnerable we all are. You know, my first thing, Mike, was thinking also, like, we had just talked on, we're recording this on Monday right now. We had just talked on Thursday night about how when you were a kid and you had the exam done and how scared you were back then. And, you know, mm-hmm. It reminded me of, like, that conversation. And then it also reminded me, like, hey, this guy's only 43. You know, he's only a couple of years older. He's your age. He's only a couple of years older than me. You know, a young man, especially nowadays, you know, 43 is nothing. It's just sad.
And it's just amazing how he was able to keep that news literally just internally with his. I mean, we find out when, like, somebody who's like an extra in the freaking Entourage movie goes to the beach, you know, or they're getting Botox or something like that. TMZ is everywhere. We know everything.
Social media is everywhere. Pictures are everywhere. Yeah. The paparazzi's everywhere, you know.
He had it for 4 years. Basically, nobody knew.
Nope.
And then kind of add to, like, almost the sadness and the cringe worry. Like, one of his last videos he did, where he was, like, skinny and he had, like, a big beard. And, like, people were on the internet calling him Cracky Robinson. And they were just, like, railing on his look. I mean, that just kind of adds to the sadness of society today. I mean, unless you literally go out and say, FYI, I could be dying, first thought is, let's mock everything, if you will. And then, and I'm sure that part of him almost is like, well, maybe I should tell people because they're not letting go of the fact I'm kind of look skinny. But
yeah, but in defense of that, not that there is a defense, people might have thought he was doing it for, like, a role or something. Like, you never... And, that's, like, possible. We're all guilty of making some kind of, did you see Britney Spears bald and being crazy? You know, you never know what people are going through. And maybe it is a wake-up call to be a little bit more... a little bit more sensitive, I guess, about what you say and a little bit more accountable for your, you know, your stupid comments. I'm guilty of making 10 million of them. Too many too soon jokes and everything else. But, you know, it's like... What it comes down to is, like, I think this guy was going to be one of the next big things. Like, and since 2016, that means he could have had it during Black Panther. He could have had it during anything, any of the Avengers movies that he was doing, any of the pickup scenes they were filming and producing. It's just, I mean, we've all known someone who goes through that ultimate fight with cancer. We all know that, we've all lost someone to it. And it just shows you, like, the strength that guy had, man. It almost makes it more sad, you know, like, it's sad enough that he died, but it almost makes it more, I guess, sad, but also, like, wow, this guy was really trying to, still do something even in his weaning hours. You know, he was still trying to make a difference and do something and be admirable and whatnot. So
yeah, it's Tara, what's your thought on the from what I pretty much heard, there's nothing that's been recorded for Black Panther 2.
I was wondering about
what that. Do you think? Yeah, everything says they didn't start production yet, so
Shaq,
I think I saw your comment there. I might be in the minority on this. I think they have to try to continue the series. And I'm not saying you got to do the same timeline as next year, got to get it out, or rush a decision. But I think it has to be done, because I was talking to my wife about this, And I remember when Black Panther was coming out.
Didn't we see it together? Remember,
what's up?
I'm almost positive me and you went to see it together.
Honestly, I don't remember.
Thanks.
I know we I know we saw it.
We shared those times. We held hands. You tried the old popcorn trick on me. You don't remember any of that? I could have sworn we saw it together. I could be wrong.
I think we saw an Avengers movie. We definitely saw a movie together because I remember we went in the theater and I snuck two beers in there. And like you looked over because you heard me pop a beer. And I brought out the other one. Like, you want one? And you were kind of a little confused. But at the same time, you're like, yeah.
Yeah, I want a beer. Hell yeah. Yeah.
I don't know why that's in here, but of course I want it. Mm-hmm. But I remember as it was coming out, and I remember, like, a lot of people were predicting, kind of like, okay, this is, like, the added movie, almost like what Aquaman is to the DC universe, throwing that one out there. I remember some comedians literally saying, oh, you're all going to say you like it because it's the black superhero movie. And
comedians quote-unquote comedians love to do that. They love to be a...
And the way it just exploded. And it's not just like, oh, a couple of liberals got together and say, hey, let's make this a big movie. The world made it a big movie. Nobody saw it making $2 billion. Nobody saw it making going to the Academy Awards, again, nominated for so many things. And quite frankly, as we see all the sadness, I mean, it kills me, those pictures of these young, like, kids in a Black Panther costume with their toys and have all the Marvel heroes in a circle and Black Panther in the middle and some kids crying as he's doing the Wakanda Forever. I think if you just end it because you're like, oh, I feel sad for Chadwick, it's going to derail all that it accomplished. It literally showed the world it's not a black superhero movie. It's just a damn good movie,
right?
Which has a whole black cast, and you can tell it without the world saying, well, no, this is a black superhero movie. And I think the only way to progress it is kind of just moving forward. You got to think outside the box. You might have to go to the comic books where his sister becomes a Black Panther.
Well,
I don't know how you handle it correctly where we say we lost him and still keep the spirit of the movie. That's for the people who made those billions of dollars and will have time to write the screenplay, but I think they got to move forward with the message.
It's funny you say that because I swear, and I swear this wasn't a dream, months ago, I remember seeing some like article on maybe popped up on Facebook or one of those things, and it literally was an article about, oh, rumors Shuri might be the next Black Panther. And I just didn't even read it. But I remember, I swear to God, I remember the headline of some, like, stupid article. And it was, like, it didn't even look like a real, like, legit website or whatever. And I kind of, like, bypassed it. I'm like, what? Why? Yeah, whatever. This is just, like, comic book people, like, throwing things out there. Like, oh, sure, you know, was it in one thing? And not that I would know anyway. But I swear to God I saw that. And I wonder if now, you know, with all this happening, I wonder if that was some kind of like leaked thing that someone knew and wrote like a little article about it. And maybe they pulled it off the internet real quick. Like, I know I saw it and I know I'm not imagining it because I really did. But yeah, Black Panther, my wife and I could attest for this. Black Panther was probably my top three Marvel movies. For me, it's hard to separate all the Avenger movies. Like, I love them all. I liked the Infinity War, probably, and the first Avengers. And then I loved Doctor Strange, and I loved Black Panther. Those are, like, my four that I really... Because I thought Doctor Strange, and I thought Black Panther finally kind of broke this formulaic world we... Like, it was just so different than the other superhero movies. Because even I love a superhero movie like everyone else does, but I'm starting to get sick of them a little bit. Like, starting to get like, eh, you know, I know what's going to happen, you know. They're not going to save the day this early in the movie because the bad guy is going to ruin it, and then this point they're going to save it, and then it's going to end. And I thought just the world of Wakanda and all that was so different. That was, those are like my favorite Marvel movies. And I love Doctor Strange because that was a whole, like, that was really different than the other Marvel movies. Mm-hmm. So and I didn't even expect to like that. I thought the previews looked terrible. But I actually ended up really liking that. But
yeah, I think top four, Black Panther. I think like Spider-Man, just because I grew up with Spider-Man. He had the first one, that's my number one. Probably the last Avengers movie, because it was just a heartstring kind of thing. And I said, damn, I don't know how they got literally everything together. And
yeah,
even though you knew what was going to happen, you still didn't know what was going to happen.
Just the size of the project coming together was very impressive. No.
Yeah. And yeah, it's either third or fourth in debate between the first Iron Man.
Oh yeah, that's good too.
Maybe a little higher than the, very debatable, but easily it's like, it comes on again, I'm watching it again.
Yeah. So. And I'm not it's funny, 'cause like, I know, like, I liked Captain America Winter Soldier. I know that's like held in like the highest regard. I thought it was good. And I'm actually not a big fan of the Thor movie, the Ragnarok one. Like, to me, it felt like a Chris Tucker buddy cop movie. I don't know. I wasn't huge on it. I know people, like, that's loved by a lot of people. I just didn't feel it that much. I don't know.
I think it's because people thought the first two were
not great.
All right to trash, where they're just like, oh, you brought it back to where we like it. I mean, I liked it, but to a degree, it's one of those, I liked it, but in the back of my head, I'm saying, okay, you literally went formulaic just to get the people back into Thor.
Yeah, was there, you know, parts, I mean, that were really funny? Yeah, I thought the action was cool. Mm-hmm. I thought they did my man the Hulk well, because I love the character of the Hulk. I thought, side note, I thought the Infinity Wars and Endgame did not do the Hulk well. That's a whole other story. I mean, we were all waiting for that epic Hulk comeback, and he turned into Nerd Hulk, and I didn't like it.
Yeah, I remember you brought this up in a previous show. Apparently, the reason is Universal owns the movie rights to the Hulk. So if they go badass Hulk, the Hulk that they own the rights to,
no,
Universal just turns around and makes a movie.
What?
But if they do stuff like kind of like the Nerd mixture Hulk. Of yeah. Bruce Banner,
Emo Hulk.
And yeah, they don't have rights to those pieces of it, hence that's why they do
oh,
it.
Oh, that's stupid. Marvel's got so much money they could have paid for. I mean, was there any moment in time that you were waiting for the Hulk to come ripping through that end battle scene as the Hulk? Like, it was building up to, he can't use his powers, he can't figure it out, he can't get angry, blah, 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 blah. They isolated him. If there was any time, like, I thought that whole Nerd Hulk thing was going to lead to him being able to control the Hulkness in him, turn into the Hulk, rip things apart, kill Thanos or help, you know, and just, I thought there was going to be a good 3-minute Hulk tearing up the battlefield and culmination scene. But, oh no, I can't complain too much. But that's my boy.
Yeah, I mean,
they're
very clingy to stuff. That's why a lot of people are worried about Spider-Man, because, you know, since they had that deal with Sony, and you see how Sony's having their side movie with Venom 2, and they're bringing in who
Carnage.
Played the Vulture?
Oh, no.
Well, Carnage is going to be in there, but remember the guy who played he played Batman as well. He played the Vulture in the first Spider-Man movie.
Oh,
Michael Keaton.
Michael Keaton, yeah.
Yeah. So, since Sony's making that stuff, pretty much everybody's saying that Disney/Marvel is saying, well, we don't want to feed us, and then basically they take over and devour more of our money.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, in a way, it's kind of one of those, like you said, okay, you're making multi-billions per movie. Do you really get concerned when the guy over here gets a couple billion? But it's the way it is, especially now with everything going where we don't know what's next. Is streaming going to take over? Are we going to have theaters anymore? We're actually going to go to a drive-in, the wife and I, sometime down the road. I don't think they can hugely take off, but who knows if we're going to have the same thing, in which case, then it's every person for themselves.
Yeah. Well, you know, this comes down to the tragic death of Chadwick Boseman, and May he rest in peace. Great actor. Yeah. Definitely, we did not get enough of him. That's for sure.
No.
The roles he could have took on could have been amazing, but very sad. But we'll segue in the show. Not that there's any kind of natural segue. We'll segue to our guest here, Mike. Let's get our guest on. Who we got?
Tonight we're going to be chatting with actress Suze Lanier Bramlett. You may know her as Susan Lanier. Her career has spanned over 7 decades. For horror fans, you would know her as the daughter of Brenda Carter in the Wes Craven film The Hills Have Eyes. She's also known for doing the second pilot of Three's Company before being replaced by Suzanne Summers. And she's also known for doing TV pilots such as Happy Days, Welcome Back, Cotter, Days of Our Lives, and the Olsen Twin show, Solo Time. So she's had a very long career, and we're going to be chatting with different pieces about her life.
Yep. So let's get Suze on the line.
That's cool. Well, Suze, welcome to the show. I mean, right off the bat, I mean, as I'm looking at your career, 7 decades in entertaining and all, does it feel like it's been that long?
No, I mean, you know, I think, you know, when they say life is short, I think they kind of mean that, you know, it's like, it seems, some things seem like yesterday and some things seem like a million years ago. You know, I was doing another interview not long, Saturday, I think, they wanted to hear about the theater credits and stuff like that. And it was like, I went, oh my God, it goes so far back. I mean, I knew Nureyev and Tennessee Williams and all the great, you know, artists of our day. And so, you know, and I've worked with Raymond Massey and, you know, some of the really, really greats and legendary, Donald O'Connor, and I'm still here. So that's cool.
So what was your what was your start? Were you, as a kid, were you into theater and acting or performing, or where did you get your start cutting your teeth as far as acting?
Well, I think a lot of young people, if they're not actually from LA, particularly back then in the 70s, in the early 70s and late 60s, actually, start in theater.
Right.
You know, you kind of get that passion from theater. I'm from Dallas, and we had a really wonderful theater company where I went to high school. I mean, a theater department where I went to high school. And it was actually more advanced than some of the courses I took in a university. And so, and then I also was a member of a real professional equity theater when I was in high school. So I cut my teeth on really great theater and working with really great artists and just because we were young, we were still.
Yeah. How young were you when you were starting that out?
Well, I was 13.
Okay.
And then 14 and 15 when I was in that theater company. And the directors of the theater company were really hard on us. I mean, you had to have your lines. I mean, it was discipline. It wasn't children's theater. We were working with adults.
Right.
Now you moved from Dallas to New York. I mean, generally when people do that kind of trek, it's either the man, I struggled the entire time, or the second I got there, I lucked out on a gig and it went from there. How did your journey go in New York?
When I got to New York, I was really young. I was like one of the street kids. I mean, it was the hippie movement. And I went to New York with the intention of becoming an actress. But I also wanted to be a part of this huge revolution of kids that were striving for a utopian type of world of peace, love, and happiness. And so I lived in the Village. I had a job when I got to New York, because I was a great typist. And so, I I could get jobs typing because I was very fast and accurate. But also, you know, it was just a scene. New York was a scene. And I did eventually, a few months after I got there, joined a theater company. And I did get a manager named Kuno Spunholz. I think by the time I was 19 or 18 and a half, somewhere in there, and 17 or 18, I don't know. I was really young when I went to New York. And, you know, initially, my parents didn't even, you know, I was kind of one of the runaway kids, so.
Mm. Now, like, what was New York like accepting that at that time, or was it kind of like the Wild West? Like, because you look back in history and you see New York has, like, all these different, you know, phases. It seems like during this pandemic, New York might be entering a whole new one again. Was it kind of like scary at that young, or was it pretty like, you know, it's good to go?
I wasn't scared of very much. Hardly anything scared me when I was 17 or 18 years old. You know, I thought that I was invincible, and it was on the street, probably extremely dangerous. and I'm kind of writing a book about that era and that time. 1967 was when I got there, and that was the year the Black Panther started. And so they had taken off on the street, and Huey Newton and, you know, Jerry Rubin was around, and, you know, all the big revolutionaries. And so it was, I found it all to be very exciting. The women's movement was starting up. I got a couple of years later when I was in this 1971, I think, I became Gloria Steinem's assistant. So at WNET in New York, we produced a show called Woman Alive. I was very much into not just theater and art, but also a change.
Right.
And, you know, so I was very much into that.
Yep.
Now, you got a ton of acting credits, and we're going to get into The Hills Have Eyes because I'm a big horror guy. But I got to ask you, and look in your IMDb, please explain the first movie it's lists you under, The Pickle Goes in the Middle.
Oh, that is funny. Okay. Okay. That was not my first film, because I did a couple of underground films in New York when I was really young. But that movie was my very first movie, and it was a locally produced movie in Dallas. I had gone back to Texas to be near my family because of a family emergency. So I had left New York and gone back to Texas for a little while, and got cast in this movie, and I played Greta. And it was so low budget that they wanted my hair blonder than it really was, and so they bleached it. They put this bleach on it, and it actually fried my hair, so I had to cut my hair really short. It's the only time I ever had short hair. But anyway, it was a comedy with some local really great actors, and then a couple of actors that moved on out to Hollywood, Charlie Del Smith and some other actors that came out here and did really well in sitcom and film. So it was my very first one. I had to join SAG and AFTRA because of that film.
That's nice. Now, after that, you started getting into like a few like TV sitcoms and so far. I mean, it's incredible some of the names I ever see. Happy Days, Ain't Enough, Welcome Back, Cotter. Anyone in particular did you feel almost like starstruck or amazed by like getting into like these kind of productions, or is it just you've been in,
well, in, I had done film? I had done some. The reason I came to LA is I was on the road doing from Dallas. I had been cast in Last of the Red Hot Lovers, Neil Simon's play with Pat Paulson, and he had a manager and was represented by ICM here in LA. And so I was getting rave reviews. So his agent came onto the road to watch me work. And then ICM, which is his, at the time was as big as you could get, it's the equivalent of CAA now, said, move to LA and we will rep you and get you work. Now, the Happy Days credit was given to me by a friend from high school, William S. Bickley, who was a huge, had he was very young, and he got all these great producing, got to produce great shows and write them. He was doing Happy Days. He was producing Happy Days, had hooked up with Gary Marshall. And Gary Marshall loved to catapult the careers of very young people. So from as soon as I got here, I just gave him a call. We had been acting partners in high school. And I said, hey, Bill, it's Susie. And I'm here in LA. And he said, well, come over to the set tomorrow to Paramount. So he invited me over. And Henry Winkler came up and he went, hey, who are you? And so after that, he said, make her my girlfriend. And they wrote me in the show that
so I like how, hey, make her my girlfriend. Okay. You know, just sure.
And we actually been out a couple of times. He's a great guy.
He seems like it.
Yeah. So it didn't hurt that he wanted me on the show. So, you know, so they wrote me in. But Bill is the one who did that. Yeah.
So how did you swing from these kind of wholesome, fun, different TV shows, you know, that they have a certain tone to them, to getting into, you know, the horror genre, to some, I mean, you've been in some really extreme, brutal movies, especially in that era. How did you start dipping your foot into the horror world?
Well, I had done quite a bit of TV.
Right.
IMDb does not really list everything for some reason. That's probably my fault. I don't deal with working that I'm platform too much like I should. But at any rate, I've done a lot of TV, but not a lot of film. And I had been a series regular on Tony Orlando and Dawn, doing stand-up with George Carlin. And he was sort of my partner on the show. And you can't get any better than that. No. So I'd done lots and lots of television, or lots at the time. And it was fast moving. And I just wanted to do a movie. I wanted to be funny in a movie. And they said, oh, it'll come. And there was a rumor out that if you did too much TV, you'd never get to do movies. Mm. And you know, they're going to peg you, they're going to brand you. And really, that was somewhat true. There was some truth to that. So Wes Craven had seen me the casting director of The Hills Have Eyes was Gus Shermer. And he was working with Carol Propp, who is still to this day a big casting person. And she recommended me for to Wes Craven as Brenda. They call me in. I got the job pretty much on the spot. And I called my agent and I said, you know, they want me for this horror movie. And he said, no, you're not going to do it. It'll ruin your career. And you just can't do horror. You know, that's so cheap. And they weren't paying very much. And he probably had that as a consideration as well. And but I loved Wes Craven and I loved the role of Brenda. And I thought, nope, I'm gonna do it. So I went against my agent's wishes and did it. And I have no regrets about that. You know, none whatsoever. I'm sorry. I'm just trying to kind of fix my little camera there. I'm really happy that I did it. It was life-changing. Eventually, I met my late husband because he had seen The Hills Have Eyes. And so I met him the night after he saw it at a drive-in movie, and it was like instant, you know, chemistry. So The Hills Have Eyes has influenced my life and my entire life, you know.
I wonder how many people have said that sentence before. Yeah.
I don't know.
I met my wife after I saw her in a horribly brutal horror movie.
Well, the thing is, you know, television, and I've been a series regular. It's really hard. It looks easy and people think it's easy, but it's very demanding. And you better have a sharp mind to be able to remember those lines just like this. You know, They don't have a bunch of cue cards around. You know, you're expected to memorize those lines, make your mark, be at rehearsal. It is hard work. And I find that doing movies is not easy. You still have all that stuff, but it's a better pace. It's an easier pace, I have found, to work. You know, and then you have a big movie at the end. I don't know. I prefer film over television, but I do another TV show right now.
Yeah.
As a sitcom in a flash, you know.
I mean, reading up on the movie, it sounded like brutal. It's talking about like 120 degrees in the day, 30 degrees at night. I can't believe some of the stuff, like the dead dog scene. They actually use a dead dog in the scenes. I think the most fascinating thing I read up on is, like, I figured, like, in something that intense, you guys would always, like, kind of stay in character. But, like, I read up how you were playing around with, like, Michael Berryman with, like, that big scene where they corner you in like, the Winnebago. And you were, like, making out with him just to, like, play around, just to get the cast calm and all. What's it like on that set and all? Is it just as simple as just turning it on when they say action?
Well, Michael was a little, when we were at the set, that the rape scene was the first day of shooting The Hills Have Eyes.
Yeah. And, that's an easy way to open it up.
And it's a really hard way to start a movie. And it was my idea, because Michael was very nervous. He knew that he looked different. And I could tell that he was very apprehensive about doing the scene. And I said, come on, when they call action, let's be making out. Don't rape me. It's a joke. Let's make a joke. And he went, really? And I said, yeah, come on. And so when they pulled the curtain back and with action and we were making out, it just, everybody laughed and you know, it relieved all the tension on the set. I didn't do it to be weird or anything. I was very seasoned when I was on that set. You know, I had done a lot of film work, TV work at that point, and I was pretty confident about how I would feel comfortable. And I could tell when somebody was uncomfortable. And even though I was very young, I could sense his discomfort.
Yeah. Now you're not only just a, you know, you also have a music background too, correct?
Yes. The actual music career came in the 80s. Mm-hmm. I had met Delaney Bramlett, who produced Eric Clapton's first album and wrote many, many, you know, he had a very successful hit band in the late 60s, early 70s called Delaney and Bonnie and Friends. And they were huge. And so he had written Superstar with Leon Russell and had written Let It Rain and had worked with Eric Clapton a lot. And we fell in love in 1977. And so I was represented by Pat McQueenie, who had several actors, including Harrison Ford and myself. And she didn't like the fact that I was distracted by my boyfriend, but I was really young and, you know, in love.
Yeah.
And I said, screw that. I don't care about that thing. I'm going to hang out with my boyfriend. Right. Mm. And so, and it was more important to me actually. And so, he was doing music. He had a nice recording studio that everybody loved recording in. And so, how it started was I got an audition for Brian De Palma, where he was looking for a girl to band. And mostly it was an acting part, but I had to sing with the band. And Delaney put his band together. I believe I had Elvis Presley's guitar player. I mean, the best players in the world. And the audition was at the Whiskey A Go-Go. And I almost got the part, but you know how many people say that I almost got the part.
Yeah,
you didn't get the part, girl, so it means nothing. But it gave me the bug. I mean, loved playing with these amazing musicians. And so I started writing music, lyrics on projects he was involved in. And then we started writing songs together. And I've written songs with a lot of different artists now, including Phil Everly of the Everly Brothers and, you know, different people. And I've had some of just my own, because I write the words and the music myself now, since Delaney's gone, and are with other co-writers. I'd like to write with Ron Finn or whatever, but I also write a lot of music songs that just I do the words and the music, and integrate them into a cabaret show that I do in LA from time to time. And so it's part comedy, it's part rock, it's part blues, it's just a really fun show. And so and I find the music to be much more relaxing. I don't even care if I'm on a movie set. Nothing is relaxing as in a recording studio or sitting at the piano, just working on a song, you know, and nobody can tell me when I can do it.
Right.
You know, I can do it whenever I want.
There was, from IMDb at least, they said there was a gap in your acting from 84 to like 2001. Were you just concentrating on music itself, or is it you just preferred to go away from acting? Because I found it kind of weird. Your first acting gig coming back, according to IMDb, was an Olsen Twins TV series.
Yes. I always had a theory that if a girl comes to Hollywood and she hasn't made it by 30, it's not really going to happen unless the actor is extremely character, which I was not, and still am not as much as a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And so after 30, you know, things slow down a little bit, and I played a lot of roles as very young, 16, and I was still playing 16 when I was 30. And so, the flavor changes, you know, every few years, right. It's a different flavor. I'm no longer a novelty. I'm no longer the new girl. You know, there's somebody to come behind you. It happens to everybody, except maybe Meryl Streep and Diane Keaton and a few of them, you know, I mean, everybody's career slows down. And mine did, and I was in love, and I had a dream one night that I was a photographer, and I got a camera and I called a few of my actor friends and I said, let me shoot you. I think I could do this. And so I started shooting, and then one of the huge agents in town saw a couple of headshots I had photographed and called and asked what I charged. Well, these were friends I'd done for free. And this was around 1984, I think. And so I said, I don't know what I charge. I'll call you back. And I thought, what should I charge? Because I'm just a beginner. Mm-hmm. And so I called him back with a number, and Paul Kohner was the agency, and they started sending me all these clients, and I started making all this money. And then my dad got sick in Dallas, and I took my camera down to Dallas to see him and visit friends. And I thought, well, while I'm in Dallas, I might as well shoot a couple of people if it happens. A couple of people had asked me to shoot them. And so I went to Dallas, and I was shooting LA style, which really nobody in Dallas was doing at the time. So all these agents in Dallas started saying, oh my God, you know, we're going to send you everybody. Nancy Johnson and the Campbell agency particularly. And so I just started shooting actors in Dallas, and my God, I was making more money than acting, you know? And so I went, well, I'm doing this. This is fun. I can turn on my rock and roll. I don't have to wear any makeup, put my hair in a ponytail, put on my overalls and go, you know?
Yeah.
And I don't even have to look good. So I still do it from time to time. I don't advertise. If somebody calls me and says, you know, are you still shooting, an old client or a new client, a doctor. I shot a doctor the other day in COVID. He said, I need a new shot for my website, and came over and I said, you wear a mask, you know, I'm very careful. I opened up the windows and did everything, but my studio is really set up well for COVID. And I did a session, and I don't want to work that as hard as I did when I was younger in the 90s, 80s, but because my focus is now on finishing a book I'm writing. And I have produced a few things, and I've directed a couple of music videos, and I'm sort of changing, you know, I just want to work on what I want to work on.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of seems like you've done that during your career. It seems like you've had, you know, a lot of different, you know, a lot of different things between music and acting and movies and TV and now shooting, and you said you've done stand-up, and you're kind of leading me into my next question, which was, you know, obviously COVID's kind of put a halt on a lot of people's creativity, and or it's inspired people to do other things. But what are you currently working on, and how have you kind of adjusted during this whole pandemic time as far as being creative and whatnot?
I am very far into a memoir. And it's only 6 months of my life in New York City in 1967.
Yeah.
Mm. And it's very dark.
Nice.
And it's pretty exciting. And a few people have read part of it and are already making offers to some degree, and are certainly requesting to read it, and including a publisher. And so I'm really enjoying the process of just, you know, after I work out and get dressed and walk the dog and feed the dog, then I sit down and try to crank out at least a page a day on this book. And it's exciting for me to step back and remember things, you know, and it's a really dark piece of work, and I like to go there.
That's really interesting. I mean, everything that you've gone through in your career, and now I'm kind of curious, as you've been in many art forms. Obviously your late husband was in music, you had a son who's in a punk band, the Dickies. Out of curiosity, when you were raising your son, were you the parents ever almost like hippie style, hey, since we were in the arts, we encourage you come on into the arts? Or were you almost timid, like, hey, not everybody gets it right in here, so maybe you want to think about being an accountant or something like that?
I would never have suggested being an accountant. I should have probably. I know, actually, when I was pregnant with my son, his name is Dylan Thomas. And so I wanted him to be a writer, right? So in the womb, I went, okay, you're going to be a writer. I didn't know if it was a girl or a boy. They couldn't tell you back then. So we're going to be a writer. And so he would be a great writer. But because Delaney had such an influence on his life, he was just around music all the time. He was in love with music. And Delaney and Bonnie had a daughter named Becca, and she's an amazing talent. And the kids would participate in the music a lot. And it just was a musical environment that was wonderful. And I let my son choose whatever he wanted to do. You know, all of our kids grew up in LA, and they had their own problems with, you know, substance abuse or whatever, you know, but you know, all kids kind of do that. I certainly had my wilder times too. Right. And so you know, you grow up and you grow out of all that stuff. My son has a regular job, working in the music industry, collecting royalties for overseas for musicians. And he's had this job for years. And he also plays with 45 Grave, the Dickies. He used to play with the Dickies. He doesn't anymore. And with a wonderful funk band with an artist named King Cotton. So he gets the best of both worlds, a full-time job with pension, you know, and then he gets to play clubs. He, before COVID, got to play clubs at night. So that's my, also the thing that I miss the most is with the COVID thing. I don't really, I do like to go to restaurants from time to time and have a nice drink and have somebody wait on me, but it's going and hearing live music at a sleazy dive or a bar and, you know, grabbing a drink and listening to blues. I mean, you know, all those wonderful clubs in Austin are boarded up. They've caught, they closed the Red Gills, for God's sake, in Austin, Texas. And that's where Janis Joplin got famous. And it's just heartbreaking to see it, you know.
It's an absolute shame.
And the internet cannot replace that. I'm sorry. Just being in that room and watching the musicians live, and there's nothing like it. And I, you know, I'm very sad about that.
Yeah. I've done Zoom comedy shows over the last few months. It's just weird and awkward, and I don't know. It's just not the same whatsoever.
It's a nice temp thing, but let's get that vaccine going.
Yeah, or something.
Well, Suze, I mean, it's an absolute pleasure hearing your whole story and glad to see how you got to, like, really push out your boundaries and do a bunch of things that you enjoyed in life. If people want to hear about your new projects coming up, your memoir, or anything like that, where could people go?
Okay, so follow me on Twitter, at Suze, S-U-Z-E Lanier, L-A-N-I-E-R. I'm also Instagram, Suze Lanier, TikTok, Suze Lanier. Facebook, Suze Lanier Bramlett, you'll find me. And the fan page, because I think I have almost 5,000. I mean, I had over, you know, I hit that mark. But at any rate, and I'm also doing cameos. If anybody wants to do a cameo shout out, I'm happy to do that also at Suze Lanier, cameo at Suze Lanier Bramlett. And I have a couple of, I have a new EP coming out with 5 songs on it. So yeah, follow me. And I post all that stuff on all of those formats. And you, if you follow me, then, you know, I'd love that because I love followers. And I have a couple of films coming out too. TV series, a short TV series called Red Rooms. And a new sitcom called Stripped with Casper Beam. So, you know, I do have some acting projects that aren't released yet. They're not finished yet. So
that's awesome.
That's great.
Final question before you go, seeing how that acting role kind of ended up being revolving door, are you almost glad you didn't get the Chrissy Snow role on Three's Company?
You know, I feel like things happen the way they're supposed to. You know, it didn't hurt Suzanne Summers' career, even though I know that she had, you know, she only lasted a season or two, I think, you know, if that. Same thing would have happened to me, perhaps, you know. No, I have no regrets about that. I've had a couple of people tell me, you're really lucky that that happened, because at that point, I was only known as a dumb blonde. And I really think that my acting chops can offer much more than that. So I don't regret that, no.
I don't blame you. Well, that's awesome. Well, Suze, we really appreciate your time, and I hope you enjoyed yourself tonight.
I had a great time. Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Anytime. No, come on back on when you got something, when another project coming on.
Absolutely. Okay. Thanks a lot. I'd love to.
All right, Mike. Yeah, I'm thinking I'm thinking we have about 7 decades of verbal shenanigans entertainment left in us, right?
Carrie's two.
Well, you're contracted until 2060, so.
Yeah, I really don't know why I signed it, especially when it said for no money. I really should have got that lawyer like you told me I should have.
I would love to see the all-time deficit I'm in from verbal shenanigans. It would be a lot of money at this point.
Your poor child's going to go to community college because of verbal shenanigans. Mm. You do realize that.
Well, you know what? That's better off for me. It's called Endgame, Mike. It's planning ahead. Community college 2 years is a beautiful thing. It's saving me money. So really, I win in the end.
Son, daughter, I was going to send you to Harvard, but you know, Berlew had some crazy ideas, and that's where we're at today. He went back into his salmonella peaches and his talk about dogs and NASCAR and the Dukes of Hazzard. I had to keep recording. There was nothing I could do.
You know Uncle Mike. He's crazy. He's crazy. You know, like, you don't even know how crazy he was 30 years ago. You have no idea.
I'll go to their community college lacrosse games or something like that. Go Blue Colts!
Your painted chest, no one else in the audience.
You're like, Berlew, there's literally 4 people here. There's no need for a rally.
You're like, give me a E. Like, no one's there. Just spitting out letters.
Scott, what county are we in again? I forgot.
Yeah. Real quick before we get out of here, we're gonna wrap it in a second. Last weekend I had a little redemption of my bad vacation. I went away for one night to a friend's cabin in the middle of Pennsylvania, all the way out kind of near Scranton. Cabin in the middle of the woods, didn't know what to expect. Nice, big, beautiful cabin. They were like, yeah, it's kind of roughing it. I'm like, roughing it? This could fit like 20 people. Like, it's a beautiful old style cabin with all the cabin things you want on the wall. Like, Mike, I even sent you that weird bear picture that was on the wall. It was like dancing bears everywhere.
You are one into cabin things.
I do love the Adirondacks. Honestly, if it wasn't for verbal shenanigans or my family, I would go far away. I would go somewhere with no internet and just give me a cabin. Because stand-up's dead, right? So that goal's dead and gone. if I could get like some kind of weird ham radio antenna and do the podcast once a week... That's fine. That's all I need.
Breaker 19. This is the Verby coming into you at 1-4.
Scott, your audio quality.
This is your lost sheep come in.
Your audio quality is horrendous. Well, it's a CB radio. So what do you want from me?
I just wait for the like first day. Like you're all like stressed out, and like maybe like Alex or the kid accidentally like drops the plane. You're like, that's it. I'm moving into a cave. And you're gone for like 2 weeks.
I could do it, man. Some days I think about it. Like, what are we? If my family was in New Jersey, I probably would be living in the Adirondacks somewhere in like a house with some property in the woods alone. I do love people. I'm a people person, but I'm also kind of like a stick me in the woods kind of guy by some water, and I'm perfectly happy. You know?
You know what you need? Like, you know those. Those lifts that they like bring, they have like a bin and they bring the guy up to like the electrical wires to fix the wires there. Yeah. Like you should have a big wall and then you just come over with the bin and then you go, hey, everybody. And you have a conversation for like 2 hours and you're like, all right, gotta go.
Yeah, like go over my moat and then like go back over the castle wall. Yeah. In like a cherry picker. Yeah. I almost got killed on a cherry picker once. I think that's what they're called. Is that what they're called? Cherry picker? Whatever.
I think they are. Yeah.
So I was filming a parade for the local TV station I worked in, and bucket truck. That's what we called it.
Okay.
And they're like, Brennan, you're on the bucket truck, which is I would film like kind of like the fire trucks and stuff like that from a aerial angle, which is fine. Mm-hmm. I actually liked the position. And it's cold, and it was St. Patrick's Day parade, so it's like that beginning of March in New Jersey weather, cold and raw, and kind of like, you know, you're sitting up there, it's windy and whatever. So the parade's like 2 hours long, and I filmed the parade, and the guy who was bringing me down, I'm like, all right, we got to wrap it up. You know, I got cameras up there. I got sandbags. He starts to bring me down, and he starts to tilt the bucket horizontal. I swear to God, Mike. Okay, so I'm holding my hand up. There's a 90-degree angle. I swear to God, we were probably at a 60-degree angle, 30 feet up in the air. I'm like, oh, my God. Like, I'm holding onto the camera, but also holding on the edge. I'm like, this ain't right. This isn't good. You know, like, but eventually he did bring me down, obviously. But, whew, that was scary. So
did he hear you, or did he just go, wait a minute, that's not the lever?
He was kind of like, I think he thought I was like laughing about it. So he was like, oh, I got you, I'll fix it. You know? And he was like very slow to get on those controls. So I went away to the cabin, and I got to tell you, man, I get why like rednecks and country boys have a lot of fun, man, because I haven't done quadding in probably 10 years. 8 to 10 years. Love quadding, ripping it up. Of course, the quad broke on me I had to get towed back, which is typical. But shooting shotguns at clay pigeons, man. Drinking by the fire. Just kind of no service on the cell phone. Literally, like, you can't get service. So you just throw your cell phone on your bed, and that's it. My bed, I couldn't even sleep in because it was so. It must have been made for shorter people. It had one of those huge, like, bottom boards. So headboard, what's the bottom board called? Footboard? Footboard, I guess. I don't know.
I guess footboard, yeah.
It was like, you know, if you do a leg press machine and your feet are... Gotcha. Yeah, that's how, like, short it was for me. And then it had this picture of, like, angry Jesus at the foot of the bed, just kind of looking down on the bed. I'm like, this is weird. So I slept on the couch with the dog. But I got to say, we blew stuff up. We were playing with gasoline, making fires, doing redneck stuff. The rednecks got it right. I think they might not live as long because they blow themselves up, but they have fun.
This doesn't sound like a business idea. Like, you know how, like, the axe throwing is becoming a big thing?
Oh, yeah.
There's got to like be in every some town way where, now. Like, I mean, there's got to be some way you can, like, rent a warehouse where you have, like, redneck activities that you can bring people in and, like, charge, like, per activity.
The redneck, there has to be the redneck experience.
Yeah, I mean, fathom it. I mean, mudding, catfishing, or what's the one where they stick their hands down the fish's throat and pick it up?
Oh, noodling.
Noodling.
Yeah.
You tell me I get like 5 or 6 of these activities in like a warehouse, and I'm not going to have a line that's like 10 miles long every weekend.
You're right, but I feel like as soon as it goes corporate-y, people are going to be like, nah, that ain't red. You need the element of danger. You need the element of... like, once it becomes a business, there's probably a lot of waivers for redneck stuff. Like, no gun. Like, no. You need that element of, like, yeah, this could go wrong. You need, like, that action park feeling. You know? You need, like, yeah it's going to be fun, but you could die.
Well, I'll put up signs saying, hey, listen, I got no insurance, so be careful. I literally have insurance... And like all the things, but I want the people in their mind saying, yeah.
Oh, so you want to
really do something stupid.
That's smart. You want the element of you're going to die, but you actually are protected.
Exactly. That's the business way.
That's not bad, Mike. That's not bad. It's one of the best ideas you came up with. But
nobody steal my idea listening to this podcast.
But we could elaborate on more redneck stuff next week. Because there's a lot of redneck things I've done. And like... You know, like, you become a normal member of society, you start to, like, block out your white trash background, but it comes humming back in the back of your ear like a Vietnam vet, like, flashbacks every once in a while. You're like, man, I was pretty much white trash when I grew up, but...
Yeah, you got the angel on one side, and then you got the redneck on the other side, and then the redneck will bash in the angel with a banjo.
Yeah, I mean, mine's more like there's a redneck angel and a redneck devil, so I'm like, damn. Like, ooh. You know, like, I'm kind of screwed either way. Like, the devil's got a mullet, the angel's got, like, overalls on.
Now I got a business and I got a short film I have to work on. That right there. My two little rednecks.
And that's why redneck could never chew. They kind of stay in the middle because either way, they're screwed. Yeah. So, Berlew, it's been a good episode. Let's get the hell out of here. Anything to promote?
I guess I'll promote the SNL Nerds podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah, I... for an interview that's coming out in a few weeks, I chat with John Trumbull because he's a huge fan of Star Trek, and that's just your little spoiler of what's to come in the future, people. But
it's coming.
John and Darren do a weekly show, basically going over everything SNL, whether they have a new episode, they'll go over the cast and the skits and the guest star and the
they break
talent.
It all down, whatever. They pick something SNL and go with it. Yep.
Yeah. And now that we're in the summer right now, they're doing SNL character movies out there. So it's really fun. It's really in depth. They have a good time. It's fun to listen to. Check them out. They're the SNL nerds.
Yeah. 100 episodes. Good for them. We've seen a lot of podcasts, Mike, since we started with our friends. They last about 30 episodes, gone. So good for the SNL nerds. They'll be catching up to us soon. So I will promote former guest astronaut Abby. She was a young kid who was really into being one of the first people on Mars. She's developed like a big presence in STEM education and especially empowering girls to get into the science fields. And she really wants to be one of the first astronauts on Mars. She's just released a book. Well, she's releasing a book. It's coming on sale January 2021. It's called Dream Big, How to Reach for Your Stars by Abigail Harrison, a.k.a. Astronaut Abby. You could pre-order it now at Penguin Random House, which is the publisher. So that's really cool for her. She's young, smart, intelligent, has a big following. And maybe she will be one of the first astronauts on Mars. So maybe she'll be with Elon Musk. Maybe she'll be, you know, SpaceX. So she was a good guest. Go back to that episode and check her out.
And I got to figure when they start Mars, it's going to be very rustic up there. So you might have Mars rednecks.
Ooh, they're taking the rovers out, mudding around on the doing keg stands. You know, I love it. Anyway, guys, I want to thank Suze for the interview. It's been a great time. Always a good hang. We got plenty more coming. We have a calendar chock full of amazing guests. I will say that right now. Can't reveal them yet, but we will put them up there. And hopefully you guys will subscribe and share it to your friends. Leave us a review on iTunes. It's the best thing you can do because it populates the podcast. Gets us into that, like, you may also like category. With the podcast you're already listening to. So other than that, guys, thank you for listening. We do it for you and ourselves because we enjoy it, and hopefully that comes through, guys. Life is funny. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back.
Hey, Scott, when are you going to unmute yourself, by the way?
Come and dance on our floor.